All right, and welcome back to Fully Equipped, your gear-focused podcast, where we take a look at weekly PGA Tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Jonathan Ball, managing editor for gear at golf.com, joined, as always, by my partners in crime, partners in golf, senior equipment editor, Andrew Tursky. Tursky, what's going on? And True Spec VP of Tour and Education, Chris McCormick. Chris, what's up, man?
How are we doing, guys?
I have breaking news. I just want to start the podcast this way. Your boy, J-Wall, Scotty Scheffler.
Stop. We're going to get into this. Don't ruin it.
All right.
We're going to get into this.
Okay.
Guys, we've been doing the podcast, and I say we. I know Chris is a recently new addition to the pod, but Tursky, you and I have been doing the pod for a while. I would say this is probably one of the most packed episodes that we have ever done. It feels like somebody just opened up the fire hose for gear news this week. It's popping off.
This is a heater, as the kids say.
It is. There's a lot going on. We'll get to it here in a minute. But as we have been doing for the last couple of pods, just some quick hitters at the top. These are stories that we're probably not going to get into too much detail on. John Rahm, as we mentioned last week, was testing an Odyssey 2-ball 10 mallet. It's officially in the bag. He now has 14 Callaway clubs. As I was pointing out, I thought I saw a white hot insert in there instead of the white hot micro hinge. It was a white hot insert and looks to be good to go. He used the 2-ball back in college. So, not a huge detraction from what he had been playing previously when he was at Arizona State. Paul Casey gives a shout out to Titleist TSI 3 after his win. Now, you're thinking, okay, who cares? Paul Casey gives a shout out to a driver. Casey's a free agent, number one, and you never see free agents heap praise on brands they aren't playing. You look at Brooks Koepka; he wouldn't even mention TaylorMade M5 by name at the PGA. Guys, this is a pretty big deal to hear Casey mentioning Titleist TSI 3, and we actually had 14 guys in the field last week playing it without a contract.
And we talked to JJ Van Wiesenbeck today. On the interview, we focused heavily on the TSI.
Little Tursky teaser right there.
Yeah, a little something. Got to keep the fans engaged, you know. Make it all the way to the end.
As Tursky was trying to break news before we got going, Scotty Scheffler, my boy, Scotty Scheffler. Tursky was out at the golf course at Scottsdale this week, and he snapped a photo and he texted it to me. And I knew right away. I texted him back and I said, "Let's go!" Because
I saw it peeking up. I was like, "J-Wall is going to be fired up."
Nike VR Pro Limited Fairway Wood is back in the bag.
Yep. And if you want to see some photos of Rahm's putter, I did get some photos today. I'll throw them up on Instagram. Nice. So by the time this episode releases, you'll be able to see it up there. That's at Fully Equipped Golf on Instagram. That's at Fully Equipped Golf. That's a plug.
Last quick hitter. Did any of you see the unreleased 2017 Nike 3-Wood up on eBay?
No.
No. I do know those clubs exist. I've seen those clubs. I didn't know they were available.
Somebody's selling one for $9,000.
Oh my.
On eBay right now. Okay. Here's the funny thing. I got this eBay link from literally 10 different people who DM'd me or texted me saying, "Hey, have you seen this?" And so I reached out to a couple of former Nike folks and sent them the link. And one of them said, "Where the hell did you find this?" And I said, "It's up on eBay." And they said, "Well, I guess the product people did a pretty good job keeping tabs on that product." So that looks like maybe one that walked right off and ended up across the pond over in the UK. But $9,000 if you want to buy it, it's legit. I did get confirmation. It's a real golf club, Nike Vapor Strike 3-Wood. So unreleased. It would have been the new product come out in 2017. As you know, Nike ended their hard goods business in 2016, but by that point they were already ramping up for a new year. So it's out there if you want to pay $9,000 for it.
Those were good looking.
Want to go
black,
in?
Black and
wanna
red.
Want to go in on it?
Why isn't Scotty Scheffler buying it?
Because he loves his VR Pro Limited. He doesn't need anything else.
What if he buys it and puts it in the bag? Is that your new favorite club on tour?
No, I love the VR Pro Limited. To me, man, is tied to Tiger. It's one of those like classic three woods that I love the shaping. I think Nike did a great one with that, and it's still in the bag. It's still got a shot to hang around a little bit longer, but I really want to know what ended up happening with that three wood, because, you know, Scheffler was having issues with the lie angle on it. It couldn't quite figure it out and was worried that it was going to snap. So I guess he just took a shot and had him adjust the lie angle, and it worked out. So
yeah, I mean, it is in the bag. He also does still have a Maverick three wood head cover in there, so he might just be matching specs. I'm not exactly sure. I don't have the full story on it, but the club is in the bag at the moment. Testing.
You got to be a buzzkill, always Tursky buzzkill.
Well, I got to give the real. Right. I got to give the real news.
Yeah, let's get into the hottest topic of the early part of this year. USGA RNA Distance Insight Report was finally released 1 year after it was initially. I would kind of just say it was initially trotted out as, you know, here's what we're looking at trying to do. We're looking at trying to curtail distance with golf equipment. The initial rules that they had kind of floated out there, and this was none of this was real rules. It was just ideas that they were kicking around, was, you know, local rules where a local golf tournament, maybe the Open Championship, maybe the Masters, could put in specific rules for reducing distance through the golf equipment that was being used. So they might have to use, bifurcated golf clubs, something that wasn't something you could pick up off the retail. It's going to be a little bit slower. Maybe the ball is a little bit spinnier. Maybe it doesn't cut through the wind. You know, those were some of the initial ideas. They had a year to chew on it. They talked to equipment manufacturers, and they came up with three proposed changes. One of them is a reduction in shaft length from 48 to 46 inches. The second is a possible tweak to how they test the drivers, the spring-like effect on the drivers. And the other is how they test for overall distance for golf balls. Now, there's a 30-day review period for shaft length. There's a six-month review period for the driver and the ball testing changes. To be clear, these are not proposed rules. They're just targeted research topics that they're going to study further. But guys, kind of what was, did you have a chance to read the initial findings or kind of what the USGA is kicking around and kind of what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I read it. And my thought is the same as we talked about a year ago. I mean, I'd like to see them play a couple tournaments with Persimmon and Bellotta on the old courses. Otherwise, week to week, I don't really need to see equipment change. Honestly, I think players are really improving. I think equipment companies are improving, like the natural just evolution of the sport. I think it's gone the way you would expect, and it's gone the same way since the 1600s. They've always just tried to improve everything, and you know, there's current limits, and I think if you're gonna change those limits, at this point, I just don't know how that looks. Are you gonna try to get, you know, new Pro V1s back from everyone and have a different ball? Like, how is this gonna go about? But yeah, I mean, it seems like the USGA is serious this time, and they're going to start making some changes. I don't think they like what Bryson's doing with a 48-inch driver shaft, and I think they're a little bit nervous. I'm curious to get Chris's take on this, because
yeah, for sure,
being an equipment junkie,
exactly, and you know it better than me and J-Wall. You know exactly what's going on.
I love it. I honestly think it's good for the sport. I think it is actually generating a little bit more excitement. I mean, people are tuning in to watch a PGA Tour player hit it at long drive distances and be competitive and win golf tournaments. It's something nobody's done before. So if we're looking for that next barometer movement, I mean, as Tiger kind of transitions and we've got a lot of these young up-and-coming guys, I mean, if you've got some of these guys that are just pure athletes hitting it 400 yards off the tee and driving par fours and getting up and down for two, I mean, that's exciting stuff to watch. I mean, you could look at it from two different angles as far as dialing it back and taking it back as far as a traditionalist is concerned, or you can let these guys go and see what they can do. Mm-hmm. I personally think it's exciting to watch.
I mean, the argument from old dudes is that, I didn't mean to call them old dudes, but that's what they are. I mean, they're traditionalists. I'll say traditionalists. They're nervous about losing courses. Yeah, sorry, Dad. I know he's probably on that team too. But it's like everything. It's like music, it's sports. You know, the previous generation doesn't like what the new generation does, but sure. It's kind of just part of the natural evolution. And they have rules in place that have been there for a while. J-Wall, would you like to weigh in on this?
Well, no, I was just gonna ask you guys, which one of these three do you think has the most realistic chance to turn into a rule? Shaft length, the driver testing, or ball testing standard changes?
I think 48 inches is probably going to happen.
Yeah, I could see that.
But that's the one that almost doesn't even really matter for like most people. I mean,
right.
99.99999% of people play 46 inches or less. So it really is just like a Bryson rule at that point.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I think the capping of shaft length is probably has the most realistic chance to turn into a rule. You know, when you start getting into the driver testing, I could see that, you know, and I don't want to get into like, what is CT testing? We've done it in previous podcasts. I don't want to go into the weeds and confuse a lot of people and just throw out a bunch of gear jargon. But from what I read, it looks like they would just be tightening the CT standards, the mm-hmm. way that they measure the spring-like effect on the driver face. And kind of reading the tea leaves, it seems like if you start really tightening them up, it's going to make it to where I've really believed for probably the last 5 years that we've kind of are banging up against the ceiling for distance. You know, equipment manufacturers started having to get creative, you know, different aero packages, you know, changing the weighting around a little bit. We've seen twist face from TaylorMade to try and straighten out drives. It's been less about distance and more about accuracy. And I think that's just because they're running out of ideas because the USGA keeps kind of tightening the screws. And that's why I could see, you know, maybe they first start out with cutting down to, you know, capping at 46, and then maybe they tighten the testing standards for drivers to cap distance. And then maybe they start trying to roll back the ball. I could see them going in phases instead of going all out. I don't think any of this is going to happen overnight. You know, I got some emails from equipment manufacturers. You know, obviously the manufacturers are completely against a lot of these changes, and rightfully so. You know, bifurcation, if you were to do this, you know, and a lot of these rules are being floated as local rules. You know, I got a lot of comments yesterday from people on social media saying this is terrible for the game. You know, amateurs don't need to be hitting it shorter and struggling. You know, they're already struggling enough. I think a lot of this is more, you know, geared at the elite players and the potential to have local rules. You know, I could totally see Augusta trying to put some rules in place. You know, they keep having to Augusta proof the golf course for, you know, first it was Tiger proofing, then it was Bryson proofing. They keep having to buy land and stretching the golf course. I could totally see them saying, look, you want to play our tournament? Play by our rules. And we're gonna follow these rules. You're gonna play a smaller headed driver, which I think is far more impactful than slowing down the face. Make it smaller and force guys to hit it out of the center, because today's drivers are so darn forgiving that you put them in the hands of an elite tour pro. I mean, even if they're missing them off the heel or the toe, which a lot of them are, it's still going out there. So I could see some changes in that regard, but I could see them kind of bringing this out in stages and slowly starting to roll the ball back.
I do have a quick question. Why would it be bad for equipment companies to bifurcate? Wouldn't that just mean all the people that want to play the things that tour pros play, whether it's balls or drivers, are now buying more?
Yeah, but you have to remember that there's a lot of R&D involved. I mean, you'd have to spend more R&D dollars to come up with this new equipment. You'd have to have, you know, additional SKUs. This is not product that you're going to be selling in large quantities. I think for the manufacturers, and look, I don't have any skin in the game here. I'm not an equipment manufacturer, but I'm just kind of looking at it from their perspective, where it's like, how do you come up with a tournament golf ball? I mean, you'd have to basically have one golf ball. It would just be like how the NBA has an official basketball. I mean, if you have an official PGA Tour golf ball that all the pros use, who's making that ball? Who's making the money off of it? You know, because all the manufacturers are in the business to try and get an edge for their tour pros. So there are a lot of things that I, you know, kind of worry about. But, you know, the tour pros have sounded off. You know, Webb Simpson, which, and I think this is probably the most realistic, is, He said, I just think the issue comes down to golf course architecture. We need more dog legs. We need tighter fairways. We need longer rough. We need smaller greens. We need more firm greens. And I believe this. I don't really think that's so much equipment. I think they need to make the golf courses more penal, not lengthening them, but just narrow the fairways, make it crazy hard to hit a fairway. And if you don't, you're going to hack out sideways, force these guys to do something other than bomb and gouge. And Rory McIlroy, another tour pro, said the RNA and USGA are looking at the game through such a tiny little lens that when they're trying to do what they're trying to do is change something that pertains to basically 0.1% of the golfing community, while the other 99.9% of the people say this game or play the game for enjoyment and entertainment. And I agree with that. But again, I think these are local rules that are more being geared to the guys that are, you know, at the top of the game and not so much the ones that are out there shooting 100 each week.
Well said, Rory.
Yeah.
I mean, what else needs to be said there?
Yeah, I know. And what else really needs to be said on the distance report? You know, again, we've got about 30 days for driver shaft length. Really interested to see what happens there. I do think they're going to cap it at 46. And then we'll have to wait 6 months and see if the USGA and the RNA come to some sort of a decision working with the manufacturers. But obviously, we'll be tracking the story, and I think it's just going to be a big one going forward. And I don't think it's just going to be this year. I think it's going to be in the years ahead. I think we're going to continue to see changes to the equipment and in the testing standards. So
my guess is no 48-inch drivers at Augusta on record.
Yeah, no, listen, I agree.
No way.
30 days. I mean, I'm in agreement there. I don't think we're going to see 48 at Augusta. I know I talked to Bryson in Dallas, and he said he was hoping to use 47 or 48 this year. He might not even get a chance. So, all right, let's get into topic number two. TaylorMade is up for sale by KPS Capital Partners. I can't say that I'm really surprised. You know, for those that aren't really familiar with the story, about 3.5 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, KPS Capital Partners, which is a private equity firm based out of New York, acquired TaylorMade from Adidas for $425 million. Now, it was actually even a better deal than that because KPS only had to shell out $200 million in cash for TaylorMade, which is crazy when you think about it. I mean, Callaway, for example, is I saw yesterday was valued, their market cap was $2.63 billion. So imagine, you know, TaylorMade's huge, and they were sold to KPS for $425 million, but they only had to put $200 million down. For people that aren't really aware of what private equity firms do, they come in, they acquire a company, they cut costs, they tighten up the staff, and the goal is to try and turn a profit. And that's what KPS is doing now. They are apparently tapping Morgan Stanley to run a sale of TaylorMade, and the value that they're coming up with is, drumroll please, $2 billion.
Nice little return there.
Yeah, they stand to make a decent chunk of change in return if they do find a buyer. But I think that they will. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the industry right now, it's never been hotter. I mean, the pandemic was kind of a godsend for the golf industry. Rounds are up. Golf club sales are through the roof. We'll get into Ping a little bit later. Tursky had a chance to go over to Ping. And just from him kind of going over there, you can see they can't keep up with this demand for clubs. It's crazy. So TaylorMade's on the block, and we'll kind of see what happens. But, you know, I wonder who ends up buying them. I actually have an idea. You know, Tiger has talked about wanting to start his own equipment company. Why doesn't he just acquire TaylorMade?
Wow. That would be the move, wouldn't it?
Why not?
If he wants to have his own own brand, own company. Start manufacturing
clubs. Seems like a logical move.
Tiger Made.
Tiger Made. All right, let's just close down the podcast. I'm
copyright. Tiger Made. Copyright.
But yeah, you know, I just wonder who would be willing to acquire TaylorMade. You know, it's a private equity firm makes sense, but at $2 billion, you know, you need somebody who's really going to believe in the business. I joke that Tiger could be a buyer, but maybe. I mean, who better than a guy who knows what's going on behind the scenes at TaylorMade than one of your tour pros, the guy who really helped.
Can I ask a tinfoil hat question real quick? Is there a reason why the first two topics were in the order that they were, where USGA is proposing rule changes and then you have a golf equipment company sale? I'm just asking a question. I didn't personally say anything at all. Would you like to go to the next topic now?
Nope. I do want to go to the next topic. That's all I got to say on TaylorMade. Your tinfoil hat is pretty large. It's not fitting your head right. So no, I didn't have, there was no rhyme or reason to the way the first two topics were put on the list. But getting to topic number three here, this story, I got to say, is probably one of my favorites this year. It's Adam Scott in this pink and black Autoflex shaft. Do you guys, let me say this. Did you know what Autoflex was before Adam Scott?
I mean, I kind of wrote it off as like an infomercial type club or a type shaft, honestly.
Yeah, just a small blip, not making a big impact.
Yeah, but now it kind of has some tour validation. I mean, Adam Scott threw it in the bag. Freddie Couples threw it in the bag on the Champions Tour. So,
that one.
I mean, Adam did struggle a little bit with it. I don't know how much you guys watched. When I tuned in, he was, you know, a little bit left, right, left with it. But we'll see going forward. And I did go in.
He was 111th in driving accuracy. 111th last week. So he struggled mightily with his dispersion. I think it seemed to get worse.
Not great. I mean, JJ went in depth on how the shaft got in the bag, what he's been seeing, his testing sessions and all that. Not trying to plug it again, but it's just a fact. I mean, we talked about it.
Of course you're trying to plug it again, and I love that about you. Always teasing the stories. But Autoflex, for those who aren't aware of this shaft manufacturer, they're based in Korea. They have this shaft brand, I guess, called SF, and it actually stands for spec free. It's an interesting design. There isn't a whole lot of info behind these shafts. They come in multiple flexes. They are designed with, and this sounds like magic beans to me, but the technology that they use for this shaft, which is kind of their secret sauce, is called KHT, which stands for Korea Hidden Technology.
You gotta love that.
Yeah. So gotta love the Korea Hidden Technology. It's a design that they have. It's not been patented, but they don't really want to give away what's going on with the shaft. And simply what Autoflex does is they're trying to create more of a whip effect. You know, you could get a whip effect with, you know, if you're a faster swing speed player using a R-Flex. I mean, you can get a decent whip effect there. But the problem is that, and Chris can speak more to this because you work with players all the time in fitting driver shafts. But, you know, with too much whip, you know, you're running the risk of messing with dynamic loft and especially dispersion, the way that the club face is, you know, coming back to the golf ball at impact, you know, there's going to be some lag there, some, you know, negative lag, but it doesn't seem like it would make a whole lot of sense for a player with higher swing speeds. But with the Autoflex shaft, the design is basically made to have that whip effect, but also bring the shaft and that club head back to square at impact. It's an interesting design, but they just don't want to talk too much about it.
I wish they would. I want to know more about it.
Trying to do some research about it, it's tough to find any technical data on it. I mean, you find the ultra light weights that they have. A lot of the independent tests that have been done are saying that players with a faster, harder transition don't see the results that somebody that's more smooth and even tempoed see. So it would make sense where we see Freddie putting that in play with his transition, his tempo, versus an Adam Scott. And I would expect to see Freddie to have better accuracy and more consistency and potentially see those gains that the shaft company claims that they provide over a player like Scott.
Well, we might just have to do some testing, J-Wall, won't we?
We might be doing a little bit of Autoflex shaft testing in the not too distant future. But you know, this shaft, I don't know if Adam Scott's going to use it. I think based on the numbers, I wouldn't expect him to to you. Maybe he does. Maybe he gives it another shot. I would say the odds of him using it again are probably, you know, 10-15%.
I mean, you just never know with Adam Scott. Like, he's just so unpredictable with this type of stuff. I can't even put a percent on it. I think it's going out of the bag, though.
Yeah, I don't see it sticking around very long.
No. It was really fun while it lasted, though, for us. Yeah.
It's pretty.
I agree.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah, it was a great story for 1 week. But guess what? The story didn't die after 1 week. And this is the best part about the Autoflex story, is not Adam Scott putting it in the bag. It's Rory McIlroy's dad, Jerry McIlroy, wearing him out at Christmas dinner to see if he can get an Autoflex shaft. Rory was talking during this week's presser, and somebody asked him, because he played with Adam Scott during the final round at Torrey, if he knew anything about the shaft. And Rory said, "Don't get me started about that shaft. All I heard about at Christmas dinner from my dad was this Autoflex golf shaft. All I heard at Christmas dinner was my dad saying, 'Can you get me one of these? Everyone is hitting it 20 yards longer. I swear it's all I heard about.'" And he said the first thing that he asked Adam Scott last week when he saw him was, you know, basically, like, what the heck is this shaft? And like, what's going on? So Rory ended up actually trying one. And he said that it wasn't one of the stiffer parts. Adam Scott was using a double X, which I think you guys, one of y'all said, is actually not really that stiff. Like, it's not really a double X flex shaft. But Rory basically said he felt like he was going to break it. So, again, that seems to be the design here, is swing smooth, and you'll basically benefit from this Korea hidden technology. But if you try and go after it, it's...
That's what Rory and his dad are talking about over Christmas dinner. Come on now, guys. There just has to be something better to talk about.
That's news.
Fair.
I mean, Rory hears about gear all the time. I mean, he's with TaylorMade. I still remember when he was a free agent and manufacturers didn't have his address, so they just shipped everything to his
dad. Was probably in heaven with that.
And Rory talked about, like, oh yeah, you know he was, but I mean, sending everything to his parents' house. And so he, like, shows up and he's like, "What the hell are all these boxes?" And it's literally like every manufacturer was like, "Oh, you're a free agent? Cool. Let me just send you everything on our line and you can test it." So, yeah, Rory's probably tired of hearing about gear. And then his dad just blows him up during Christmas dinner, asking him for an Autoflex shaft. I would have paid good money to be in the room.
Autoflex is going to send his dad so many shafts.
That's what I was going to ask. So how can we follow up to find out how many were sent to the McIlroy households?
Did Jerry McIlroy get like 20 Autoflex shafts at his house? I'm pretty sure that he did. Now, especially after this story comes out about him wearing Rory out for the shaft. But let's get into the last topic for this week. And this, I think, is a really interesting story. We were kind of alerted to Ping is having issues keeping up with demand in their build shop. And Tursky, you're local, based in Scottsdale. You had a chance to go over to Ping. You wrote an awesome story, which I think people need to read out on golf.com. Kind of set the stage for what the heck is going on there.
Yeah, so I had no idea what to expect. They said, you know, accountants and the president were working on the lines. I was like, okay, well, let's see about that. So, you know, I went over there, and basically Ping's just selling so much G425 product. They're behind on physically assembling the clubs. You know, you put the shaft on the head, you swing weight the head, you get the grip on there. They're literally on the production lines helping that happen. They're working overtime during the weekdays. I went in on Saturday. It was like 9 a.m. John K. Solheim, Ping's president, is on there. He's swing weighting clubs. He's putting back weights in the heads. Like, he's literally getting his hands dirty on the line. Wow. It's just the most unique thing I've ever seen. And J-Wall, you can speak to this. I mean, we've been to all these facilities. We've toured all of them. I mean, have you ever seen a president on the production line? It just doesn't happen. It just absolutely doesn't happen. It just shows you where equipment is these days. Just demand is so high. There was a little fold in the story. Now, John K. Solheim, he assured me many times that had nothing to do with like the situation that they're in. It's just a pure demand issue and physically assembling the clubs. But they did have some cargo. Yeah. There was a cargo ship that spilt overseas coming to America. And I guess they had some bag products on there that got damaged. And they did have club products that spilt but were recovered. So they're currently going back to Japan, you know, to do inventory, and then they're going to come back. No, he said they weren't damaged, but they did reorder because they assumed that their containers were lost. So now they have, you know, basically at some point they'll have double what they ordered, and, you know, 2-3 month delay on that. But he says they have plenty of product and it's just assembling the club. So they're working overtime nonstop. There's a bunch of people in there. I mean, they all have masks on, socially distanced, so they're doing it the right way, but putting everyone to work. They are volunteers, not putting them to work. I don't want to misconstrue it, but yeah. Yeah. There was a call to action.
We pointed out in the previous podcast about, I talked to another manufacturer and they had said typically it was like a 2-day turnaround for club builds, and they were backed up 5 to 6 weeks. And after I mentioned that on the pod, I had a bunch of people reach out to me and say, yes, I placed an order, and they told me it was going to be 6-7 weeks before I was going to see product. And others said, you know, they were told it was going to be 2 weeks, and it's now been 5. So, demand's never been higher, but also you don't want to be losing product in the ocean.
How could you ever expect that to happen? You know, like, even if you just can't make that kind of stuff up.
Could you imagine, like, being John Solheim and getting that phone call? Hey, Mr. Solheim, I just wanted to let you know one of our shipping containers coming across from Asia was accidentally dropped in the
ocean. No, I can't imagine. I would be like, okay, stop prank calling my phone. Like, that's enough of that.
That's not a thing.
I'll take 2 large pizzas. Hang up. Yeah.
All right, Tursky, you had a chance to interview Titleist Tour rep JJ Van Wezenbeek about Adam Scott, Autoflex, TSI, which has been running hot.
Talking to JJ is always great. You know, he just has such a wealth of knowledge, and especially now with the TSI drivers being so hot, it was just really great to catch up with him for a nice sit down. I think you guys are going to enjoy it a lot. Let's get into it now. JJ, welcome to the Fully Equipped Podcast. I appreciate you making the time.
Thanks for having me.
I know it's kind of tough on Wednesdays. Wednesdays is moving days for equipment guys. Can you kind of tell people what, like, that process is like on a Wednesday? You know, you're getting ready to go to the next event. You know, what's that process like?
Yeah, so Wednesdays for the tour player is a pro-am day. So for some of the guys, it's kind of their last check of their equipment. So we'll check in with all of our guys early in the morning before they go out for the pro-am. And then an event like this at Waste Management, it's a 9-hole pro-am. So it's a really good chance for us to kind of check in with guys, everything working, you feel dialed in. So throughout the day, that it'll start to slow down, and then it's a matter of doing inventory, what grips, what shafts, what club heads are we gonna need for the next week. So we'll slowly start doing inventory, closing the vans up, and then getting our truck drivers ready to go to the next event. So they'll kind of start the caravan of vans up towards Pebble, and we'll put orders in that'll ship and arrive at the next location for us to restock and be ready for the next week.
Do you go home first, or all you guys riding on the van? I know the answer, but I just kind of want you to
I am very lucky. I actually used to drive one of the tour vans, which you're often on the road for 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row. Wow. I'll fly home every Wednesday. I'll go work with our R&D team, our sales and marketing teams Thursday and Friday. Saturday's laundry and packing, and then on a plane on Sunday.
Okay, life on the road. That truck driver job, that must be tough.
It takes a special kind of person to be able to do it, because they're also our techs. So they have to be incredibly proficient on building golf clubs for the best players in the world in a timely fashion. Then they also have to be a commercial truck driver. And they also, you know, in a pre or post COVID world, they're the greeter to the truck. They're the only person that's on that van all day, every day. So when players or caddies come on the van, it's, you know, meeting and greeting them and finding that out what they need. So they have a lot of different skill sets.
How would you describe your job now? Like, what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
So on a normal Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, my job is to take all the people that are using Acushnet products, whether it be our golf ball, you know, our putters, our wedges, our woods, our irons, and make sure they're in the best position possible. I'm very spoiled. We have Drew Page doing Scotty Cameron putters. We have Aaron Dill that everybody knows and loves doing Vokey wedges. We have 40 Pitts and Jeff Byers that help us with golf ball from R&D. So I mainly will focus on irons and woods, but a lot of times you're just having to be available, whether it's, you know, hey, I have a new swing coach. and I'm delivering the loft a little bit differently. So these players are always trying to get better. So we need to make sure their equipment works from that week, not, hey, I've been working on this for 2 months and it's not been working. So we have to be ready and able to kind of get them the best product for that week.
When a player shows up, you know, say here at the Waste Management, and you know, they go to their locker, what are they greeted with? Like, what are the freebies that a titleist staffer gets? I'm always curious about that.
Yeah, it's, again, different in a COVID world. So we're no longer allowed inside. So that we utilize distribution centers and sanitizing product. So Drew Morris and Todd Harris have a very different, where normally they would spend Monday morning putting things in at players' lockers. Now it's putting it in bags, sanitizing product, delivering it, you know, loading it up offsite, trying to transport and move it around, and then sanitizing at our distribution center. Mm-hmm. But a player is going to get a couple dozen balls for the week. They're going to get a few gloves, a couple hats. You know, a week like this, they're going to get cool green hats to wear on the weekend, and things like that, you know. And then it'll just be if anything they ordered from the week before. Aaron Dill, they might say, you know, Justin Thomas this week wanted a fresh 60, so he can tell Aaron beforehand, so Aaron can have our inside team grind it. He can check it and get some stamping done on it. And then that'll be with Justin's stuff when he arrives on site.
Speaking of Justin, I was going to get to him in a little bit later, but might as well talk about it now. He's been doing a lot of shaft testing after changing to the TSI 3. I guess he's seen a bunch of big ball speed increases, and he's kind of looking for that right shaft. You know, can you talk about what he's been doing, why he went to Aventus Red for a little bit, and just where he's at now?
Yeah, I think when you look at Justin's launch conditions, they've kind of changed a lot as a professional. You know, when he first turned pro, you know, he was the hit up 6, hit up 7 on it, try to get every ounce of distance out of it. And Mike Thomas and Justin have worked a lot on leveling out his attack angle. And what you've seen is him become an elite iron player on tour. And when you have that situation, sometimes that launch angle on the driver comes down, and then sometimes spin comes down. So with the TSI 3, we were able to lower spin a little bit with that increased ball speed. That's helped a lot of players. But when you're as finely tuned as these guys are, mm-hmm. you know, you and I see 100, 200 RPMs less spin and we're thrilled. For these guys, you know, that might provide some sort of angst or difference. And Justin switched shafts a few times throughout his professional career. So he's just trying to find that perfect combo to match up. And then sometimes, again, your swing when you're flying around the world and you're playing events doesn't feel as crisp. And sometimes you want to kind of maybe take a step back and go back to some things you know and get your swing where you want, so that when you're testing new stuff, you know that you're swinging your best.
A little lower spin, higher speed, that's not a bad combo. You know, we've heard that a lot from the TSI. Is that what you've been seeing? I know you work with a lot of these tour guys, and can you kind of just describe, you know, like the commonalities between all the testing sessions you've seen?
Yeah, the big thing is kind of overall performance. I mean, the ball speed's great, but you know, these players are playing for a lot of money. They don't play with an eraser. They don't play with a ball in their pocket, you know. So overall performance matters. I think you've seen from a couple of our free agents is not only they feel like they have great ball speed, but it's really good control. As much as we think these guys hit it on the center every time, they don't. And so if I hit it a little bit on the toe, or am I able to maintain that spin? And the MOI properties of a TSI head are what are really helping that. So not only is it heel toe, but it's up down the face. So when they hit that little toe shot, instead of it diving the left rough, it's holding its line, and they're in short grass. And now they have a scoring opportunity on a shot that might not have been their best. Mm-hmm. So we keep hearing from players just overall performance, like great looks, great sound, great speed. But that forgiveness when they miss hit a shot is really powerful when you're on the golf course rather than in a fitting bay.
So I'm burying the lead a little bit here, but we got to talk about Adam Scott. Obviously, the auto flex kind of blew the internet up. Were you involved with those testing sessions, and kind of what's been going on with Scott? What's he looking for?
He's always looking for better. And what does that equal is always a different definition. You know, when you look at Houston, you know, Ventus Red, his first event with TSI 4, you know, new Pro V1X leads the field in driving distance. So how do you take a guy who leads the field in driving distance and then make it better? And so, you know, he likes a certain feel that maybe a lot of other guys out here, you know, you see a lot of guys in here, you know, playing some hazardous stuff and things like that. And, you know, probably even yourself, you know, when you swing, you know, a Tensei White, you're like, I like how firm the tip is. He's the opposite. He wants to feel the thing load. He wants to feel it kick. And when he was exposed to this shaft, he thought it was a unique thing. And it's a process he has to work through to see if it works or not, you know. And he's such a good ball striker, and he's so talented on knowing where the club face is that sometimes he likes to explore these things and experiment a little bit.
Is it like super whippy? Like, we don't really know much about the shaft yet. They're kind of secretive about it.
It loads very, very different than probably anything in your bag or anything that you've swung in a long time.
Yeah. I see that from the pictures and videos that are going around. I just saw Spieth out there on the course. I was just wondering, you know, he's obviously been struggling a little bit. Has he been working on much equipment-wise? I know he hasn't been much of a tinkerer throughout his career, but where's he at right now?
Yeah, he's been playing the same stuff for a while. Again, you're in a situation where he always wants to make sure he's swinging his best if he's going to test anything. So that we've only done a couple little tweaks at the top end of his bag. He went from a U500 4-iron to a T100 4-iron, just looking for a little bit different window at that part of his bag, especially here on the West Coast. You know, Torrey last week, where it was getting windy, looking for a little bit flatter trajectory. So we did some things shaft length-wise and head-wise to kind of just get him a certain number and a certain trajectory at that part of his bag. But he's been kind of standing pat on all the stuff he has. And, you know, I think he's seeing a lot of flashes and practice rounds of really, really good stuff.
How much do you guys go through stats with players, like when they're making equipment switches, or do you ever suggest equipment switches when, like, you see a hole in their game somehow? Like, how does stats drive equipment?
100%. You know, it's very big for us as being part of the team. You know, take, you know, whether it's Team Spieth, Team Thomas, you know, Cameron McCormick and Jordan, you know, we pull stats together frequently. We'll sit down with that team and look at areas that we think we can help or areas that they're doing great in. So we'll always be tracking stats throughout the year, especially around product launches. And then it allows our R&D team to also track trends and things like that, whether it's bag makeups and things like that. You know, when you look at somebody like Webb that carries 5 head covers, he's pretty efficient outside 200 yards compared to tour average, because he's hitting a head cover into everything, you know, and not a blade 3-iron. So we help it to try to drive performance a little bit and then find opportunities where we can help players get better.
For amateurs, what kind of stats should they be looking at, do you think, when they're putting together their sets?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things you can look at. You know, it's really how much keeping track of. Do you want to just do simple fairways hit, you know, and take that up a notch? How many do I miss left? How many do I miss right? So the next time you go to a club fitting, you can go, well, every time I miss the fairway, 75% of the time it's left. Okay, well, that's powerful stuff for your fitter to know. I'm at an advantage. I get to work with these players week in, week out, look at stats, have shot length data, and know everything. So when an average consumer, the more info you can keep track of when you go into your driver fitting or go into your iron fitting, you know, keep track of greens and reg from different yardages. Go, hey, if I'm between 2 and 225, I never hit a green. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's look at a TSI 27 wood. Let's look at a TSI 3 hybrid. You know, you got options. You got U510, you got U500. People look at the Titleist stuff and go, why do you have so much stuff in that part of your bag? Because that's the hard part. And that's where a lot of amateurs, I think, are used to going in the shop and buying 3 through pitch. And then you look out here and go, nobody's using 3-irons. Adam Scott's using a 7-wood. You want to take advantage of technology and find ways to shoot better scores.
Like you said, I mean, Webb Simpson, he's a great player, defending champ. This week he's got 5 head covers in the bag. It's like, you don't have to go pitching wedge through 3-iron blade. Like, you know.
Yeah, every club's a tool. And that's, I think, the key standpoint of it is it's a tool to do something for you on the golf course. So, you know, your driver is supposed to go long and straight. Great, that's an easy one. Well, now everything gets more and more complicated. A 3-wood's got to launch high off the fairway, be good off the tee on a, you know, tight hole or a hole that there might be trouble through. You know, then your next club's got to be a high soft into a green thing, you know, and down through the scoring clubs that are going to allow you to have really, really good distance control, down to a lob wedge that has to be good off tight lies, good out of a bunker, good out of the rough. So all your clubs have to have a purpose. And I think so often players don't get fit and don't share enough with their fitter that they just end up with the same thing as their buddy or their friend they played with. And if you really start getting fit for all 14, you're going to be a better player.
How precise are these guys actually with their builds? Like, will they be like, this is 2 grams off, or this is 0.1 degree lie angle off? You know, like how dialed in are they?
Most of them aren't, but we are. You know, the way we keep track of what we build for a player, in terms of record keeping, what's in players' bags, what had they had, shaft tipping, weights, you name it, we record it. At the end of the day, Justin Thomas doesn't really know or care. I know what it looks like, I know what it feels like, and I know how it flies. That's what he cares about. Our job is to make sure it looks right, feels right, flies right.
Right.
So his job is to do the hitting part and then feedback on the rest. So we are very particular, keep a lot of data on individual builds so that we know what to change if we need to change or what to repeat if we have to repeat it.
JJ, I know you're a busy man. It's Wednesday. You got a lot to do. I got one last question for you. You've been out on tour a lot. You've worked with a lot of tour players. You've traveled all around, played a bunch of courses. What's your one piece of advice you would give to amateur golfers or just golfers in general based on your time on tour?
Yeah, I think, you know, from a playing standpoint, it would definitely be, you know, the folks out here that are playing for a living, you know, actually enjoy it. You know, they aren't going home and not playing golf. They're just playing golf differently. They're in a cart and they're having a blast doing it. And when you find something you have a passion for, you know, that gym routine isn't tedious. It's a way to get better. That short game session, that, you know, extra time at the range, you know, stretching and rolling, that if you have that passion for it, you know, just let it feed into it. You know, mm-hmm. If you're an amateur golfer and you're passionate about golf, why aren't you going to get fit? You know, you need to find a way to have more fun. I mean, I think you've seen it before in some of the hitting bay when you hit new TSI. I mean, just seeing you on a video and seeing the smile. I mean, ball speed's fun. Straight's fun. You know, you see, you know, Volk and Aaron fit somebody out at TPI and that first time they get the right bounce and the shot they could never hit all of a sudden flops over a bunker and spins and you see that big smile. There's a lot of options out there. It's overwhelming. Go see a fitter who's really experienced, knows what they're doing. You know, go to Titleist.com, search your zip code and find somebody that can get fit for you. And all of a sudden you're gonna go, I don't like three woods. And you hit a 16.5 TSI 2 and go, wow, I love three woods. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the thing is if you're passionate about it, go keep going with it.
It's just great advice in general. Follow your passions in life. Couldn't have said it better myself. JJ, thanks for joining Fully Equipped.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
All right, and that'll do it for episode 77 of Fully Equipped. Thanks again to JJ for the time. If you're looking for more gear news, be sure to check us out on social media. We're at Fully Equipped Golf on Instagram and at Fully_Equipped on Twitter. Thanks as always for listening. We'll see you around.